Want to take the SoCal Sound with you anywhere? Download the SoCal Sound app to your mobile device. You could stream the SoCal Sound 24/7. See what song just played on our playlist, listen to an archived show, read an article from our newsfeed, stay up to date, or watch a SoCal Sound session. It's all there, and it's now Apple CarPlay and Android Auto compatible. Download the SoCal Sound app today.
We're here with Alex, Aiden, and Ian. Collectively, it's Nation of Language. Welcome, and thanks for coming and playing for us, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
We've been big fans of your music for a long time, and we were talking before we started rolling tape that the morning show, at least, has been playing you guys since about 2018, I think, which is...
It's incredible.
You've been together for about 8 or 9 years, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it might even be... I started writing the songs that would... sort of like lead to the formation of the band probably in like 2014.
Right. So a decade pretty much of this band. And I know you've mentioned influences before, but let's talk about them to our audience right now. I know OMD is a big influence.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about you getting to meet them recently as well. But what else is in the hodgepodge that influences the music of Nation of Language?
So I mean, a lot of the sort of contemporaries of OMD, you know, Human League, New Order, Gary Numan were really sort of foundational to this band. But I think there's also, you know, I read once that like the bands that you're into between like 14 and 18 sort of shape how you consume music from then on in some way. And so I think for me, that was like The Strokes, Interpol, you know, Belle and Sebastian. And so I think that there is a lot of that sort of, that's like kind of foundational text for me in a way, that I probably don't even process that much. I think it's sort of a, there was an intentionality when the band first started to sort of, you know, I wanted to explore using synthesizers because I'd never tried that before, and I had sort of felt like just writing on guitar at the time, you know, like I'm not very good at guitar now, but I was really not very good then. It was like getting sort of stale, and so I wanted to kind of reinvigorate the writing process and make it something that was exciting again.
So by bringing in keyboards, a new instrument for you at the time, I'm guessing, you were able to achieve what that you couldn't achieve on the guitar?
I mean, I think, well, one of the big things that made writing sort of a fun challenge was that I was mostly just using a bass guitar and a monophonic synthesizer, so a keyboard that can only play one note at a time. And so when you're writing on two monophonic instruments, it's not like sitting down at a piano where you're hitting all these big chords. And so I think it created this sort of challenge of having these two things weave in and out from each other and sort of trade roles of being the lead instrument in a way that, you know, was different than sort of just like strumming the same old chords on a guitar.
Right. And then putting the band together, and obviously, you have a lot of keyboards.
I do now.
I see the setup. How did you put the band together?
Oh, it started with I had written a couple of songs, and some friends were like, "Let's just go to the bar over in the next town and play them. Like, you can teach them to us, and we'll play them." And
the next town being where?
That was in Kenilworth, New Jersey.
Okay.
In 2014 or 15, probably.
Right.
That lineup sort of changed a lot. And at one point there were 5 people in the band, and then it would sort of, on any given night, you didn't know how many people would be in the band. and then they all, like a bunch of them, moved to Los Angeles, actually, like right around the same time, and I had sort of run out of musicians that I knew in New Jersey. And Aiden was like...
I basically said, I don't know how to play anything, but if you think you can teach me. And since the basis of the band was simple music that you could sort of visualize in your mind, those early songs were simple enough to be taught to me. I was like, I would love to keep the band going. I don't want to see it go away. I love these songs.
Right.
And so he taught me, and I've learned a lot since then. I wouldn't call myself like a synthesis, but I really love performing the songs.
Right.
And then Alex came in a few years later and sort of melded into this trifecta that I see going on into the future forevermore.
So Brooklyn is the base of the band, right?
Yeah.
And I remember seeing that when I first came across you. And 10 years ago, there was a lot of bands in Brooklyn. Brooklyn was becoming the place. Is it still like that?
I mean, I think for me, it's always been, I only sort of noticed once it was pointed out to me that, you know, there had been all of these bands that were getting big in Brooklyn at the same time. And then there were sort of a few years where it didn't seem like a lot of bands were coming out of New York. But I do feel like we're in a moment now.
A boom.
Yeah. Where there's a lot of exciting stuff going on.
Right.
Whether or not it even is sort of feels like it's related to our genre specifically, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, it's probably always been happening.
But it is nice to see, you know, friends at festivals making it in, magazines and like from pages of blogs and stuff. And you're like, wow, we played shows together in 2016 and we're all sort of making
Everybody's
it.
Sort of coming up.
Yeah, feels great.
Finding a way to make a living, which is not easy, obviously, in the reality of the music industry at this point.
That's very true.
The best way to stay up to date with the SoCal Sound is by signing up for our email newsletter. Get the inside scoop on station events, ticket giveaways, and pre-sale opportunities. Go to thesocalsound.org and click sign up for the email newsletter at the top of the homepage.
Touring is a big part of it, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think you said that you come through LA twice a year. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about, if you can, the development of the songs and the sound over this period of time. When you said in our genre, what do you call the genre that Nation of Language fits into?
I mean, I guess...
sits on top of. Or adjacent to,
if you can, within the larger umbrella of alternative music, and then if you want to call indie music a genre, and new wave, and synth pop, I guess.
Synthesizer music.
So do you feel like all of these things are rotating in and out of the music that you write?
I feel like we don't really think in terms of genres too much, at least when, you know, that's kind of becomes what everyone else does. You know, you make the music and other people are like, oh, it's this or it's that. They classify it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's never seemed like you go into making songs with a specific kind of label in mind too much, especially these days.
Not so much, yeah. And especially, you know, when the band started, very much so. I wanted to make new wave style music. But I think the more time goes on and the more sort of comfortable the band gets, the more we're sort of like nudging out what instruments can be involved and...
textures.
Yeah. The new record starts with a harmonica and like a flute sound. And so I think, you know, it's always expanding. Mm-hmm. What they call it, Baroque pop. Isn't that one of those like bazillions of genres that have been named in the last couple of years?
Yeah.
Is that when you bring in cellos and strings?
Yeah.
There's a lot of silence in between things.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, obviously, over this decade or so to think of the influences that you started with, and then 10 years later, you've got your own influences now that you've sort of picked up along the way from making music. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, as you go through the process of releasing singles, as you make them, which is obviously the way to do it these days, but to actually still want to make albums as well, is that important to you?
Yeah, I mean, I love, I love the experience of listening to an album and of, you know, I think we all still really like buying vinyl and having the experience of getting it and opening it and putting it on. And so, you know, like a lot of thought goes into track listing for us. That's always a sort of a part of the creative process that, you know, it's like happens right at the very end, but like an album sequencing can really change how you experience it. And so I do like thinking in terms of the album as a whole,
right,
rather than just as a series of singles.
Right. I know that, was it earlier on this year, you guys actually met the guys from OMD?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were here in Los Angeles at Cruel World Festival.
Right.
In the lunch line.
Yeah, we were both in the lunch line.
So it was an accidental meet?
Yeah. I mean, like, we knew that they were there and we were going to be going to see them play, like, later in that day. But we were just, like, in the cafeteria backstage getting food. And then it was like, that's them.
And I was like, hi.
Did you introduce yourselves?
Yeah.
Aiden did,
like,
yeah.
We're Nation of Language. And he was so kind. He was like, oh my God, I love your music. You guys have to keep doing what you're doing. Please never stop. Like, it's amazing. And it was very effusive and sweet. And then we went to our separate tables and had our lunch.
Right.
You were very bold that day. There was no one that you wouldn't go up to and be like, hey.
I met Tony Hawk that day.
Nice.
Dave Grohl.
Wow.
we never were able to corner Devo. But I'm sure if we had,
we will.
Mark Mothersbaugh would have
got an earful. Yeah, definitely.
One of these days.
Yeah. So the new album is called Dance Called Memory, and it's out on Sub Pop, which I believe is your first time.
Yeah, first album with Sub Pop.
So as any musical artist goes through their stepping through the gears, so to speak, from making music at home in bedroom and then maybe releasing music independently and building through bigger and bigger venues as you go along. What's it like to hit Sub Pop Records, which is just such a legacy alternative and independent label?
I mean, it's awesome. It's the sort of thing that you know, as you're writing the songs and releasing them independently and doing all this stuff, you sort of, for me at least, that was never something, like working with Sub Pop was not something that I thought would be like attainable in my career. Even after we ended up, we play in Seattle a lot as well. And over time we got to know people who worked there. And for some reason in my head, there was this block of like, well, they wouldn't want to work with us. And then when the opportunity came, it worked out really well. And it's such a positive, inclusive environment that they've built, and one that feels like it thinks long-term instead of just trying to kind of churn things out.
It's a really sweet community.
Yeah.
Last time we were there, they had a little picnic for us when we were in Seattle. Mm-hmm. To hang out in the park. That's really nice.
Yeah, it's really cool that so many people that work there have been there for a long time.
Right.
And yeah, they do see far into the future as well. And it feels like, lays the groundwork for a positive relationship with a band, for sure.
And it's cool because a lot of, you know, we were sort of talking about before how bands that we have sort of been coming up with are now like label mates with us as well, you know, like Gorilla Toss or Deeper, who we're about to play with on Thursday at the Fonda. They are also Sub Pop bands now. And so you have this sort of like, we've all been striving and now we have all achieved this thing. And none of us are doing the exact same thing, but there is some like connective tissue between us.
And a community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Turn to me, turn away.
What about songwriting for you through the years? You know, as people get older, they have different life experiences and things that they want to write about. If you look at this new album compared with the first album, four albums back now, and what, 6, 8 years or something?
Some of the songs.
Yeah, some of the songs are at least that old. The album itself came out in 2020.
Right.
And so, but yeah, there are songs, you know, a song like On Division Street from the first album is...
one of the first songs.
Yeah, quite early in the writing process.
But so as a songwriter, I guess I'm trying to figure out, how have you changed over that time, and how does that show up in the music you're making today?
I mean, I think I've gotten more comfortable exposing kind of more of my inner life, perhaps, in songs. I think...
Were you writing for a character before, or...?
Not necessarily a character,
but... Although actually the first EP, which doesn't exist anywhere anymore, was four characters.
Yeah, that is true.
But yeah. We don't talk about that.
Yeah,
we don't
talk about
that. I'm sorry.
It doesn't exist anymore.
For whatever reason. Yeah.
No, I think perhaps just, you know, getting older, having more life experiences, and... sort of recognizing progressively more and more the value in sort of allowing myself to
be vulnerable.
Yeah, to be vulnerable. And because I think, you know, when you first start writing songs and then performing them in front of people, it kind of feels like no matter what you've written, it feels very vulnerable. And now that we've been doing that for a long time, I think just there's like progressively more and more of me sort of in the songs, and more time taken really each step, but I was going to say the lyrics especially. But although it is one of the things is, it is very interesting to be performing the songs that I wrote in the early days still. And, you know, I think some people have this thought that if you're playing the same song for years and years, that you'll get bored with it. But the life experience between writing it and now sort of shines a different light on those old songs in a way that can be very interesting. And, you know, a line from an early song will suddenly strike me in a way that it never had before, because I've gone through something different now.
Can I put you on the spot and ask you to give me an example?
I mean,
there can be times when songs almost feel like spells, and sometimes I've had it happen where you write a song and then you're playing it 3 years later and you're like, you realize that some line that you wrote had some sort of predictive quality for your life later on down the line, and that's always a spooky feeling.
I will say the song, for me, The Great Commute, only gets more and more powerful to perform as the world gets more and more difficult to cope with. And yeah, at first, I think we started performing that song pre-pandemic. And, you know, I think it's an amazing song and lyrically speaks to a lot that we were dealing with then. But over the last year plus, it performing is just like so cathartic.
I mean, consumerism has not abated. I think, like, to get back to your, like, I almost don't think I would want to, like, the ones that come to mind are sort of...
Don't want to spill the beans.
Yeah.
Aww, they're too personal.
They're too sad.
Yeah, or take the magic out of it for you.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I feel like I can identify them in my head, but that's where they can remain.
Sometimes they speak to sort of recurrent cycles where you're like, well, I thought I dealt with that side of myself, but then here I am making the same mistake again.
Yeah.
It's funny how life works, eh? So just to wrap it up then, first of all, thanks for playing for us.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's great.
And having a chat to go back to Sub Pop and from where you started to where you are now. It sounds like you're with a label that is looking ahead, as you mentioned, not just signing bands because they think they have a hit single or something, but signing bands for a career. How do you see the band positioned right now, moving forward? Obviously, this album's out. You're touring as well. We're recording this. By the time people see this, you'll have already played in LA.
Okay.
But what's coming up for the rest of this year and maybe looking into 2026?
I mean, a whole lot of touring for sure, which thankfully we all really love doing.
Thank goodness.
Like having toured with people that didn't really want to be on tour, like that, it makes everything very difficult. But when everyone is sort of excited about the adventure and ready to take on the challenges, it really makes it feel like a sustainable thing that you can sort of just keep doing and doing.
Right.
And so I think that is, you know, once the album is sort of written and released, videos are made. I think we all go into sort of like nose to the grindstone, just tour. Because at least for me, like growing up, that's the only way I knew how to like show my music to people was to play shows.
Right.
And so that's really what this band is. I said like a central focus of this band, I would say, is just getting in front of people as often as possible.
Showing them what the music can be.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having
Aiden,
us.
Ian, Alex, Nation of Language, thank you for performing for us on the SoCal Sounds. Great to meet you guys.
Thank you. Great to meet you.
The SoCal Sound sessions are produced by 88.5 The SoCal Sound. Session hosted by Nick Harcourt. Audio recorded and mixed by Tristan Dolce. Edited by Matt Blake. The SoCal Sound is a public service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. Streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.